It's time for an inside look at the most powerful motorsport on the planet, WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. WFO Radio. We're getting ready for the weekend. The big weekend is coming, and I'm super excited about today's show. We have got Drag Racing's Encyclopedia, Brett Kepner, going to be our guest for the duration of the show, and we're going to just pepper him with questions about his storied career in drag racing, announcing, television, as a bracket racer, and anything else that happens to come up. So stick around. If you're out there on the social media, you're on YouTube, you're definitely going to want to share this one, because I fully expect to learn a lot and have a great time too. Before we get to Brett, the thing is that I learned more about Brett getting ready for the Garlitz Hall of Fame this year, the International Drag Racing Hall of Fame induction ceremony, of course, and Brett was inducted. And so I had seen him on television for many, many years. How could I not, watching drag racing growing up in this era? And just to think of all the different positions and magazines and all the columns and all the publications and the fact that he could pull into a drag strip in a rental car and take home the money. And when Don Garlitz is telling stories about you, that you are amazing Don Garlitz, that's pretty great stuff. Now, the bad stat of it is that this is his first time on WFO, but we are slowly checking off those bad stats and making them right. Before we get to that, though, I want to tell you about the people who make it possible for me to do this show, like Total Seal Piston Rings, the leader in ring seal technology, TotalSeal.com, Matt Hartford, Keith Jones, Lake Speed. They are over there Ringing out that last percent of horsepower out of every engine with their technology. Go to the website, check them out, and before you build your engine, I want a 2,000 horsepower engine that can drive on the street and traffic on the 405. You call them first, and they'll set you on the right strap. Make them their your first call, not your last call. TotalSeal.com. Also, Samtech.edu, the School of Automotive Machinists and Technology. Start your education at full speed. Block, head, CNC programs, Motorsport EFI tuning. They are approved to train veterans under the GI Bill. Go to samtech.edu. Marvin Rodak, rodakscoffeeandgrills.com. The hot sauces, the spice rubs, the coffee, everything good, Marvin Rodak has got it going on. A drag racing fan from down there in Fort Worth, Texas, and keeps me fired up most days. Not today, though. Not today, folks. But tomorrow, yes, 817-924-6821. And of course, Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School, the dragster adventure where you can drive a dragster, show up with the clothes on your back, and leave with memories for a lifetime, driving a dragster, racing your buddies, having a good time. And, you know, maybe you want your top alcohol license too. Frank can help you with that. You know, he's helping a certain NASCAR driver right now as we speak. Those are the people who make it possible. Plus, we got our WFO store where you can check out face coverings. Like, I wish I had used one because I think I got a little cold. But we'll talk about that later. It's time to get to our guest. Super excited. Drag Racing's Encyclopedia, Mr. Brett Kepner. Brett, welcome to WFO.
Hi, Joe. Hi, everybody. Glad to finally be on. I'm a longtime listener and longtime fan, so it's great to actually be interacting with you instead of just staring at you on a one-dimensional piece of plastic on my wall.
Well, that makes me feel terrible because because I am a tremendous fan of you as well. And as I've gone through this arc of the show, and that there have been some people that I don't want to bother people, Brett. But as our, you know, we kind of got to know each other a little bit more. And now after the Garlitz thing, we had a great interaction and we talked about it. And here you are on the show. And so I'm thrilled. Your first, hopefully not your last, in that there's no way we could extract all your information in one sitting.
Well, I hope that wasn't the objective.
Squeeze it out of them. Well, people are excited. Like Jerron Settles is out there. He says this has the potential to be the best WFO interview ever. So just the fact.
Are you familiar with Jerron? Phenomenal talent, amazing painter, amazing racer. Really a fun guy to follow. I've followed him for a good majority of his career. Just an amazing guy. Speaking of amazing guys, I'm going to take some of your time to make public my thanks that I've already given you in private, but make public my thanks for what you did for me by basically producing and directing an acceptance video for my induction into the Hall of Fame this year. I was in a bad situation. I could not attend. And you really came to my rescue, my friend. And I thank you profusely for what apparently, by all indications, came out fantastic on site. So thank you publicly.
Well, anytime. The way it works.
Call people that I'm not friends with and ask for favors, but boy, you were right there. You did a great job.
Well, and anytime, really, because it's first of all, it's an honor for me. Number one, like to help with Garlitz, the whole Hall of Fame thing at all.
Absolutely. And I actually hosted that deal myself for a while, and it's not an easy job. It's also an extremely high pressure job because of what you are actually accomplishing during that 3 hours. You're creating the highlights of many people's lives. So it's not an easy gig. And by all indications, he has picked a great guy to do it. You've done well.
And I just want to thank you for doing that, you know, edit free. That made it a lot easier.
For people that don't know me, I would be more than happy to say that you suck and I don't like you and hang up. So don't think that I'm just here to stroke you. I don't want the other people, the viewers, to think that I'm here to stroke you either.
No, If anyone, but let's move on. Sammy Eubanks is out there. Blake from Ohio is out there. Blake, young man, loves drag racing. Holly Vining is out there. Hey there, Brett Kepner.
Hi, Holly.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of your friends are going to be out there probably watching. And as
you know who Holly Vining is?
Of course.
Of course you do. You work with her as well.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I forget about the... See, now you have an incredibly interesting and detailed history in this sport that a lot of people don't acknowledge. And I just fell victim to stupidity there for not adding another chapter of the Joe Costello story. You've done television for Ted Jones and Masters Entertainment Group for more than a decade.
Close. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Tom Gee approached me at the SEMA show and we worked together. And then, you know, Brennan Holly, I'm going to ask you about Ted. I'm going to ask you, like, you know, Ted Jones, tell me you want to start right there. Because to me, Ted Jones is an underrated personality in drag racing history. He's in the, you know, Bristol Hall of Fame and all. But when you spend a little time and you know what, Brett, like I on the air, I speak. And when there's a microphone, I speak. But most of the rest of the time, I try to shut up because everybody around me has got an amazing story. And that's Ted is one of those characters. He's like, what? He did this. He did this. He did this.
You don't learn by talking. That's absolutely correct. Plus, you don't hear the really good stuff if you talk.
So. True. But let's talk about you. Let's dive in and we'll get back to Ted and we'll get back to everything because, you know, like, look at this guy. Amazing stuff. If you grew up in drag racing, we grew up watching.
Can I interrupt for just a second? If you go back to the previous photo.
Yes.
Those photos were taken by, not that one, but the other one. Those photos were taken by the fantastic photographer and a very close personal friend of mine, Matt Polito. One of drag racing's best photographers. That picture is near and dear to me. There was, these were all taken at the top end at Las Vegas. Where else are you going to get that sunset?
Right.
And the guy holding the camera with his back to the camera there is a guy named Bubba. His real name is Scott Barnes, and he's no longer with us. Bubba and I worked together, alone together, for more than 20 years.
Wow.
We did half hour weekly shows, usually three of them a week on ESPN, just him and me. No editors, no directors, no producers, no scripts, no nothing. That were all aired on ESPN. He was a huge part of televised drag racing through the years and a tremendously close friend of mine. Sorry, I don't want to get into too much reminiscing over Brett's scrapbook, but that was an important part that I had.
Yes, but we, on the other hand, really enjoy Brett's scrapbook, and that's part of it. And you mentioned Matt Polito, by the way. You know, I there were a lot of people I could reach out to ask for, you know, dirt, but he said to call you a yellow rat bastard.
Tell him I'll cut him open and show him all the dark stuff inside there.
What
do you know what the reference to?
What's that?
Do you know what those lines are references to?
No,
It's an infamous underground tape. It's actually much more well known now than when it was originally made, called the Red Tapes. It was about a guy who made crank phone calls to the owner of a bar called the Tube Bar. It was outside of the subway in New York City, who was named Red. And this guy used to call and make crank calls and harass Red until Red literally almost just went on a shooting spree. look it up online, the Red Tapes.
The Red Tapes. It's
unbelievable. Yeah. So, yes, that's between me and Matt.
Well, what's funny is there's a lot of people out there in the drag racing world, and you build relationships with as many as possible. Some are strong. Me and Polito, we like hang out, right? He took me around San Francisco and showed me like all the different motorcycle shops. He's got like art hanging in and all that stuff, and gave me like the locals look at the city, which I really appreciate that. And we'll talk about how. And he tells the story about how you came up to him with a point and shoot cam and said, "Hey man, take a look at my shots." And he was blown away.
Yep. Absolutely true.
Well, let's start at the beginning, Brett. Drag race.
I was born a young child. Yes.
You wanted to do the thing from the Steve Martin, the Jerk movie. I know. So did I, but that's how you're supposed to
do it. Because I wasn't born black. I was born white. So I didn't want to do the Steve Martin thing.
Oh man. So, how'd you get into drag racing? Like first drag racing experience, like drag racing, were you a little kid? Were your parents involved? Cars, car culture?
I remember distinctively, distinctly. Sorry. It was the airing on the ABC Wide World of Sports of the 1966 NHRA Winter Nationals at Pomona. I asked my father, we were watching on a little, probably, I don't know, 14 or 15 inch black and white television set. And I asked my father why the cars smoked the tires. And he told me, and I was intrigued. And within a couple of years, I would have only been, it was 66, 8. And I became more and more intrigued, started buying magazines, really became intrigued. I have a natural affinity for devouring stuff, whether it's information, relationships, food, whatever, really started just cramming as much as I could on everything about the sport. I did not actually go to a drag racing event until my parents took me a few days before my 12th birthday to the first National Hot Rod Association Summer Nationals in 1970, held at
York, Pennsylvania.
Very good. Very few people get that.
Yeah, well, I just read it, so it's not like I really knew it or anything. I did some research here, Brett.
I'm not going to give you any credit if you don't deserve it, so just shut up when you come up with a good answer.
I'm too honest. I want to give the real deal.
Yeah, the last NHRA national event ever held in an airport. It was only there for 1 year. Before it was moved to Englishtown, New Jersey, and I witnessed Gene Snow run the fastest funny car speed of all time at 214.28 miles per hour at that event. It was heaven, and it did nothing but make it more of a lifelong drive, I guess you could say. It was pretty serious prior to that, but nothing's come close to diverting my attention since then.
Danny Nelson is out there, one of the true historians in drag racing, of course, world champion.
That's what I just said, world champion. Yeah.
Amazing, amazing stuff. So
I've known Danny since the mid-1980s when he first showed up at St. Louis at a $5,000 bracket race, the Illinois State Bracket Championships that I held. I guess it would have been 1981 or 2. And this guy from Arkansas showed up and ended up, I believe, going to the final.
Really?
Yeah. I think he and Rod Fuller, Rod Fuller's dad, excuse me. What was Rod's dad's name? Either way, I think he and the Fuller family towed up together from Arkansas.
Amazing. And that the incredible memory, such a hallmark of, like, you know, folks like Garlitz, in other words, and they all say that your drag racing's encyclopedia, though. Does it just stick? Or do you have to work to make it stick, like all this information? And I know you're working on some projects. We'll get into those as well. But do you have a natural gift? Some people can feel totally rested after 2 hours of sleep. I call that a natural gift, right? Do you have a natural gift for recollection of these things?
I'm not going to say it's not work, because it's no different than cramming for a math final, except, or, you know, more like an algebra final in our sport, except that you love algebra. Here's an analogy that I give to a lot of people. I'm always flattered when people say, how in the world do you remember the stuff? The incredible minutiae of the detail and stuff. Well, to me, it's important. I obviously don't remember the minutiae most of the time if it's not important to me. I forget stuff as well as don't know stuff all the time. But here's the analogy that I use. I say, to me, one of the most incredible people or positions I've ever seen and admired were old school pre-computer day parts counter persons. Remember them?
Yes.
Used to go into a parts store and say, I need a gas cap for a 58 Edsel Corsair. And they'd say, oh, 68925. I have it in blue or green. Which one? Just right off the top of their head.
Right.
You know, they didn't go into the giant catalog books, you know, that are laying on the counter. They certainly didn't key in, you know, the information to the AutoZone mainframe computer. They knew that stuff. And again, it can only be for love of what they're doing, because who in the world would remember the parts number to, you know, crazy stuff?
Right.
You know, there's parts numbers to a pieces of equipment that might be asked for once in their entire lives, and they knew that stuff. So I guess it's the same thing. You know, I find all of the information fascinating. It's all part of a giant puzzle, and I enjoy it, so I remember it.
So out there, we've got our audience, and, you know, I've got kind of a general flow of where I want to go with this, but some people are, you know, asking questions as well. So is it cool if I throw in a question from them every once in a while?
Absolutely. I'm not going to take my clothes off on this show, but I will answer the clothes, answer the questions.
We're not going to get everything, folks, okay. But Craig Gaultier, who...
nothing else. That's all you're getting. All right.
As far as they know.
Shout out to Bobby Bennett. Sorry, go ahead.
Love Bobby. Bobby's been very helpful with us in WFO. Craig Gaultier, who is a, you know, super stock racer out there, had a pretty nasty spill a couple of weeks ago, but got right back on the horse, bought a new car. Way to go, Craig. Can't wait to see it. But he wants you to tell everybody about your help in creating the factory stock class, which we love tremendously. On, you know, WFO, we did a podcast, factory stock. He wants you to reveal, like, how did you do that?
I'll do this in the quickest format possible. In 2010, the American Drag Racing League, for whom I worked at the time announcing and doing their TV, was involved in a change of ownership and direction. You probably remember it went to Sheikh Khaled from Qatar, the control of the association at that time, who hired Tim McAmis to run things financially. Tim's a brilliant guy as far as car construction is concerned, but he's one of the best real money men, businessmen I've ever seen. Hence Tim McAmis Race Cars doing so well. And Tim began to restructure some things in ADRL that really needed to be restructured. ADRL was just a bleeding money like nobody had ever seen. Well, you know, when you're giving away free tickets, but yeah, you're paying first, something has to give, you know? So in the discussion about things that were going to stay and things that were going away, Tim and I have been friends since he was a teenager. I think he's substantially younger than me, but I've known Tim since he literally started driving. He's from the St. Louis area, like me. So we were discussing places that the sport could go. At the time, 2010, Ford had just resurrected the Cobra Jet program in 2008 and started making these, you know, 650 and 700,000 horsepower factory cars. At the time, Dodge was getting involved. Long story short, I didn't create anything. I basically just kind of pulled an NHRA and reinvented something that had been around forever. Let me jump forward to an analogy here. In the history of drag racing, let me rephrase that. In the last 70 years of drag racing has been around for 120 years. Don't let anybody tell you that the first drag race ever held was in Santa Ana, California in 1950. If you think for 1 minute that it took 50 years of automotive history for somebody to line up two cars and have a competitive race, it's absurd. But since 1950, drag racing has reverted to the same base every 10 years. And that base is two production cars racing heads up. For the youngsters out there, heads up means no handicap start. It doesn't have anything to do with anything else. It just means an even start. In 1950, that's basically where things started. Things got wild. 1960, the superstock revolution happened. Then things got really stupid with funny cars. In 1970, Pro Stock Eliminator came back to two production cars. When Pro Stock got stupid and no longer represented production cars in any way, shape, or form, what happened in the 1980s, Mr. Joe? Do you remember?
You tell me, please.
Pro Street Eliminator. Yeah. Pro Street, the Pro Street movement of two street cars with wild engines and everything else became popular. In 1990, when Pro Street got completely stupid to where the cars weren't even really capable of racing, they were just basically show cars, we came up with small tire racing for the first time. The original National Muscle Car Association and its 10-inch tire freak show, as Jamie Meyer used to call it, changed everything. In the 2000s, we got into small tire specific racing. 2010, drag radial. It all keeps going back to production cars. That's all I did was here were these production cars that were being made that we had never seen in our lifetimes, and nobody was really doing anything with them except the National Hot Rod Association was struggling like mad to find a place to put them in stock eliminator where they didn't piss off every other racer. And that led to the fuel injection classes, then later the factory stock classes, and on and on and on. The format of the original factory two different classes that I was involved with, the original factory stock class, came from an idea that I had to involve Jesse Kershaw from Ford Motor Company and Dale Aldo from Chrysler Corporation. Now, to start the class, I got a hold of Jeff Tuton, one of the great stock eliminator racers and one of the most inside human beings to the Chrysler Corporation that's still alive. And he got Dale interested in this. Kershaw was on board from the get-go because Ford, of course, was leading this war in high performance. So we had all the Mustangs that we needed for this new class. However, Ford's racing Fords isn't going to sell that many Fords.
Right.
So the concept that I created was every performance car in the world would be allowed to compete in the Supercar Showdown. That was the name of the ADRL heads up, what is now called factory stock class. The way it worked was this. I created a rule book that included every production car on the planet that produced more than 400 horsepower. They were allowed to run at that time with no weight brakes or anything else. Now, we're talking about, you know, everything from Aston Martins to Bugatti Veyrons to, God, there's a Skoda that makes over 400 horsepower, believe it or not. A huge book, a huge volume of all these different cars that could run. I knew that we were never going to get a Bugatti Veyron, even with Sheikh Khaled running the ADRL, who owned a couple of them. I knew we were never going to get one of those Skodas. I knew we were never going to get, you know, a Lamborghini or anything else that fit these rules. But if a Ford and a Chrysler showed up and we just had two cars and they ran in the final, I could send out a press release that said every car in the world was invited to this. And here's who won. In the first case, or the case of the first race was a Mustang. And Kershaw loved it. Kershaw took it to the ad execs at Ford, and they're like, hell yeah, sign us up. If you're going to prove to the world that we can beat anything out there, sign us up. Meanwhile, Tootin got some of the higher horsepower Dodge Challengers ready to go. Are we already out of time?
No, absolutely not. We are not. There is no time limit. That's what's great about WFO.
What was I going to say? Got some of the early Dodge Challengers involved. But he also got Aldo to talk to the engineers and put together the V10 Viper powered Challenger. Number 001 of only about five or six of those that they ever made was sent to the ADRL events to race in the Supercar Showdown. Chevrolet hadn't even thought about the Copo Camaro projects yet. Corvettes were legal, but the weak link, of course, is the Corvettes had independent rears, and not too many people were going to try and make them go in the nines.
Right.
And we wanted to keep these as factory stock as possible. So Dr. Jamie Meyer got into Chevrolet as their performance director, and he's the one with a little bit of egging on from the rest of us, being Aldo, Kershaw, me, and Tim McCamus, and Jeff Tuton, to get the Copo program going with a whole lot more horsepower than it was originally designed for. The problem was the Copos didn't come out until 2012. So the first 2 years of the Supercar Showdown, it was Mustangs and Dodges, simple as that. As soon as the Chevrolets came out in 2012, the NHRA took the idea and ran their showcase eliminator at Indy of factory stock. Now, let me explain something. The National Hot Rod Association just stole the idea out from underneath me and everybody else in the class. That's what the NHRA does. The NHRA has always consisted of people who are not stupid enough to try new deals without letting some other idiot go ahead and see if it works. And when they took that idea, I considered it one of the greatest compliments of my career.
Success moves tracks.
It's just flattery. I mean, yeah. That's all it is. You know, if I get a blue mohawk and, you know, next day Joe Costello's got a blue mohawk, I'm going to be flattered. You know, yeah, you're stealing my look, but you know, it's the same deal. Interestingly, the ADRL went through another major change in 2013, and the incoming regime didn't know anything about this class, had no concept of what it was or what it was there to achieve. By the way, those press releases that I said that I would write, you know, Ford destroys the world, those showed up in everything from Motor Trend to Time Magazine. And that's what the Ford execs wanted, and that's what Dale Aldo also wanted when he started seeing them. Finally, towards the end of the ADRL run, one of the V10, the Viper-powered Challenger, with Kevin Helms driving, won an event, beat a Mustang in the final. And Chrysler went crazy with the releases that I sent out. Anyway, the new regime came in with ADRL. They destroyed the entire program, no exaggeration, within a week. And the NHRA took it and ran. And I was elated that it didn't die. You know, nobody expected 10 years ago that the factory stock class would run into the wall that it is currently racing against. And that's the 750 25-2C regulations. The minute a car goes 749 in factory stock, everything changes because you have to make them non-stock cars. There's no way around it. You have to put a 25.2C SFI chassis in those cars when they start going under 750. So right now in NMCA, which is the only other place that the cars compete on a regular basis, they're almost a 750 index class. The National Hot Rod Association, to their credit, 10 years ago said, we want this to be an 8-second flat, 170-mile-per-hour class. And their goal has always been to keep it those numbers because of the 750 deal, especially when, you know, as you probably announced yourself, Skillman went out and won 7-7 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And they knew that the world was going to end if they didn't stop it right then and there, and they did. And the bickering on the internet among the few people who pay attention to the class and the rest who don't have any idea what's going on anyway, think that this is, some kind of NHRA way to make Ford lose and blah, 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 blah. It has nothing to do with it. They're trying to keep it an 8-flat class so that it doesn't turn into a funny car class, which is what happens every time you go back to that every 10-year return to the base of two production cars.
Yeah, it's has been particularly annoying to think that it's like some sort of black helicopter, conspiracy against Ford.
That's been going on since the 50s.
Yeah.
That conspiracy, that blank association is doing blank to make sure that blank doesn't win, is just garbage. Wally Parks did eventually admit that the pro stock weight break wars of the 1970s did screw the Chryslers. But that's a half a century ago, and people still argue about it on the internet. Okay, now I'm starting to drift, so you need to correct your ship.
All right. Well, that I think it was great, and everybody's loving it. Mike Ashley out there saying hello, and thank you for being there at the start of his career, and just everybody loving. They want you on once a week now. It's been pretty crazy. But let's go into your time with the magazines and something like over 1,400 articles, 62 publications, or many more than that. That your thoughts and ideas have been put forward in an era where the magazine was everything for drag racers. Like now we've got digital and there are podcasts and there's live streaming, but in drag racing, maybe more so than other things, the drag racing magazines are still alive because of the rich tradition coming up through Hot Rod, et cetera. You were a big part of that with Superstock, Drag Illustrated. And I think you started out there very young, right? Evan is big on that.
Brand new magazine, ladies and gentlemen. It's real. It's pages. You can hold it in your hand. It's nice, thick stock paper. Pretty pictures. Good writers. It's Drag Racing Edge.
CGI, folks. It's not. That's not real.
What?
I said that's not real. That's CGI. You're just...
Unfortunately, who could argue it? Ken Stout and Evan Smith and Brett Underwood and... God, who else is involved, actually went out on a limb and started a new paper magazine. Unbelievable.
And look who's out there watching. Look who's out there watching.
Who is?
Evan.
He's always watching.
Revan.
Yeah. When you're in your bedroom at night, he's watching. Trust me.
That's scary.
We know he watches Kevin McKenna in his bedroom, but that's a whole other story. My background in the magazines was simple. Going back to that race at York, in my time in junior high school and high school, I had a proficiency for journalism. One of the reasons I had a proficiency for journalism was because I had determined sometime between 1970 and 1973 that I wanted to be a writer for the magazines, most specifically Superstock and Drag Illustrated, which was my favorite at the time. In the 1975 and 6 era, I was sending manuscripts. I would go to races, and write race reports. Nobody asked me to, but I would send the manuscript to different publications and, not expecting anything to happen, just kind of making sure that they knew that some guy was out there writing stories. Fast forward to 1977. You know this story because of the induction. I was writing stuff for Drag World magazine, which was AHRA's house newspaper, as well as stringing results to local newspapers in the St. Louis area. And at the 1977 AHRA Gateway Nationals in St. Louis, I met the man who was editor of AHRA's Drag World. That was Jim Kelly, a legendary photographer who has basically started everybody's career. He's responsible for so many people that are in Don Garlitz's Hall of Fame. It's not even funny. Long story short, he said, "You're that guy that keeps sending me stuff." And I said, "Yes, I am." And he said, "Well, I got to tell you, it's not that bad." He said, "How would you like to go to the AHRA Nationals for Superstock magazine next week?" By the way, he had just taken over the editorship of Superstock. That's an important part. Well, I was going to college for journalism at the time. I was only in my second semester, and all of a sudden I was offered the job that I was going to college for. Now, I didn't know at that time that he was talking about a job that paid you only enough money to get to the next event and maybe buy a hamburger.
Right.
But as you're aware, that doesn't enter into it. You know, especially now when you're 17 years old and, you know, this is your life's dream. So, of course, I said yes. And, of course, I quit college. I bought every English journalism book I was going to need for the next 4 years. I still refer to them to this day. But I was with Superstock from 1977 until 1996 or seven. It's 97 or 8, whatever year the magazine finally died in its last incarnation. Meantime, I wrote for a lot of other publications as well. And basically, I got into this business as a writer. The announcing, there's no announcer in drag racing. I'm hoping you're in the same boat. There's no announcer in drag racing who ever started out to be an announcer, did you?
I was a racer.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons that I respect you. There's only a handful of racers in the announcing profession in this business, and I don't care what sport you're announcing. If you've never done it, you got no business announcing it. And I'm just sorry to put it that way. Yes, there's a lot of fans, you know, who know an awful lot of things. But if you don't understand that if one guy gets to the finish line and runs three over and the other guy gets to the finish line and goes two under but didn't get there first, the other guy didn't break out. Or here's one of my favorite pet peeves. If you're not a racer, you will never understand that the guy who got a 3-second handicap before the other guy went red didn't get a lucky round.
Right.
He had to hit the tree just like it was a regular race.
Yes.
So, yeah, there's
a lot of advocate of True Start created by Peter Bianco. Yeah. That's a different story.
nothing against the Biondo family. True Start was the idea of a gentleman who I consider one of the greatest drag racers of all time, and in fact was one of the greatest drivers of all time. You don't know who I'm talking about.
No, yeah. I don't know where that came from. I thought that
raced for years with his wife Brenda, who was just as good as him. Steve Taylor.
Oh, really?
He fought tooth and nail for the 2 red light rule for decades, from the mid 1980s, if I remember correctly.
It's the right thing.
Of course. As you know, I race a lot of slow cars. It's just what I enjoy doing. Yeah, there's one. It's my current ride right there. Won an NMRA national event just recently. Anyway, I race slow cars, and therefore I have a saying. Yes, the slow car prior to True Start, the slow car had the first chance to red light. But I always say the other side of the coin is the slow car is always in the lead until it's passed. But when you equalize the red light option, there's no advantage at all. You know, fast guys are going to say, well, I have the slow car in sight all the time. Slow guys who've raced slow cars all their lives are going to say, it doesn't matter. I can back into you with a 70 mile an hour difference. True Star was an amazing deal. We're really drifting. You again need to correct the Titanic. What the hell were we talking about?
Never the Titanic. Okay, people are loving this. I just want you to know. They're loving it exactly as it is. This is free-form conversation, Brett. This is what it is.
Thank God I don't talk a lot.
No, you're good.
My battery's dying, so that's going to be an interesting angle.
Well, how much battery do you have left?
We'll 15%.
How much?
15%.
15? That's not enough. Where's your cord?
Well, I don't have a cord that goes into the phone, but I can lay it on the battery charger and I think we'll be okay. And maybe you won't be able to look at me anymore. But we'll talk.
Exactly. All right. And we could do that. Okay, let's take a quick break to look back at a couple of big moments that were shared at the Hall of Fame by Ted Jones and have been presented to me for our entertainment. For instance,
I haven't seen any of this.
Isn't this great? All right.
I don't know. We'll find out. I have not seen, actually, sitting right in front of me is the disc that I have not looked at yet. So I haven't seen any of this.
So I reached out to Ted and I said, hey, I'm going to have Brett on at some point. This was right after the Hall of Fame. And they sent over a couple of things. But this is the most entertaining one that I think. Like, I like it. Let's all watch.
For 1997, the Pontiac Motor Division of General Motors has introduced a brand new keyless entry system. It's designed for the novice. No pesky numbers to remember, no buttons to push. It works.
What are you doing? You just destroyed a car with a sledgehammer. What's the story?
I destroyed a window. It destroyed
a window. Yeah, that's true.
Bubba and I, Bubba Barnes, the cameraman that we spoke about earlier, we traveled together all the time. When I buy a rental car or when I rent a rental car, I always get the full coverage insurance. That's because if I'm not racing that rental car, then I can take it off of large jumps and drive it through shopping malls and things like that. And if you buy the insurance, you don't have to pay for it. People don't understand. If you don't buy the insurance and you blow a tire on a rental car, you just bought a tire. And people say, oh, well, my credit card insurance will cover that. And yes, and they will drop you just like if you were charging too many examples on your own credit card or on your own car insurance. So I always buy the insurance. We used to use my rental car as our air-conditioned golf cart in the pits. You know, instead of parking your rental car, getting a golf cart, and driving, you know, putting all your equipment in the golf cart and then driving around the pits, well, you just drive around the pits in the rental car. Well, on a hot summer day at Rockingham, I closed the doors and I guess the automatic door lock went off or whatever. The car's sitting there idling, you know, with the windows and the doors locked. And I went up to Jason Peterson, I guess it was, who had just married Steve Irwin's daughter and become manager of Rockingham International Raceway at that time. And I said, hey, you got a sledgehammer? And he says, matter of fact, I just bought two. He says, I got a 5 pound and a 10 pound. I said, give me the 10 pound. So I walked over to the car and you'll notice that I hit the back window.
Yes.
And I walked up to Bubba, and he saw the sledgehammer in my hand. He knew exactly what I was going to do. I said, fire it up. He puts the camera up on his shoulder, and I did that bit, and I busted out the back window so that we still – if you bust out the driver's side window, the wind comes through, and it kicks up all the broken glass in your eyes and everything else.
You were thinking ahead.
I took it back to the rental car agency, and – they said, anything wrong with it? And I said, yeah, the back window's busted out. And I threw them the keys because when you have the insurance, they don't care.
Right. They're getting paid. Holly wants me to ask you how many rental car companies have banned you.
Here's an interesting answer to that question. Fewer companies have banned me than guys who found out I was racing their cars and wanted to know what they ran and how I did.
Wow. All right.
So that's not many, but of the probably six or seven over a 30-year period, guys who found out, you know, I left time slips in the car or something, or they saw my helmet or something like that, they were more interested in it. Again, I always buy the insurance. So trust me when I tell you, the insurance company doesn't really care what you do with the car. In fact, if it's a higher mileage car, they hope you destroy it. They get a new one.
Interesting.
In their fleet. So it's not that big of a deal.
Right. The views and opinions of the guests on WFO are not necessarily the views of the host, and we're not advocating destruction of rental cars.
I'm at a point in my life now where I can make this stuff public, and it ain't coming back to me, so it's not.
Well, and that's what's great. All right, so let's talk about the Mr. Dirt stuff. I used to read the column as a young bracket racer, and I used to not know that it was you, and I was thinking, like, you know, really, is this guy...
We decided that we did not want Mr. Dirt in the Superstock and Drag Illustrated magazine series on how to race a slow rental car or slow street car in a box class, in an electronics class. We did not want people to realize that the guy involved was that dick. I knew I was going to cuss.
That's fine.
Okay. Was that idiot on television. Therefore... actually, I raced under the name Mr. Dirt long before I became an announcer or a TV guy. It was a name given to me by my friends. I had a 66 Barracuda all-stock automatic car, Name all the people in that picture, by the way.
Oh, I can't, but doesn't your shirt say Mr. Dirt right there?
I can
name Mark Powick. Like, what's going on here?
That's Mark Powick. Starting on the left is me with long hair, which by the way, thanks to COVID, I still have now. I'm wearing a ponytail right now. Right next to me, we're going left to right here,
yes,
is Tim Hyatt, a true legend in drag racing in every aspect. The man who tuned did the clutches for every major drag racer in the history of the world. Pro stock racer Mark Powick, Tim's wife Beth Hyatt. Dave Perotti is the bearded guy who ran a supercharged, fuel-injected, methanol-burning Chevette in the 1980s, years before Pro Modified was ever created.
Wow.
The next guy is Hal Clark, who ran a funny car called the Main Event. The next guy is Dave Tartabini, who was a bracket racer. And the guy on the end was one of Mark's crew members. I do not remember his name. All this group is the bowling team for Dragway 42 from 1979. And I was the manager of the track.
Mr. Dirt. Now, how old are you there? Like, you were 12 in 1968. So this is.
No, I was born in 58. So that would have been 21. Yeah.
Wow. Look at that. And Powick, the cowboy.
Look
at that hair, man. I got to nail him with that. That's just messed up.
Yep.
But he
was racing a blue 69 Roadrunner at that time, and he was Jesus.
Really?
He was incredibly good. He made it to the final round of the AHRA Bracket World Finals there.
Well, he is. He's still a heck of a racer, and we're waiting for him to break through and get a win. It's going to be a mega party. But, okay, so bracket racing against boxcars in this Mercury. What's up with the Mercury Grand Marquis? Like, it seems like you Garlitz, this is Garlitz. This is what Garlitz loves to talk about you. At least he's talked about it three times in front of me. And so that he would be so excited to that you could go out and win races in a rental car, and he really couldn't understand it. And that you guys would have a shoot somewhere for Masters. You'd have to go somewhere and you'd get in like a day early, and you'd go find a bracket track and you'd go bracket race and do this deal in a rental car. Was it always the Grand Marquis? Did you always like pick the four-door, Ford or?
No, and I need to explain to the listeners that, you know, who are probably wondering, why in the hell would Don Garlitz care what Brett Kepner did in a bracket race? The only reason it even came up is because Don and I worked together on television for many, many years. We did literally 25 years. We did a bunch of TV shows together, including the Mother's Car Show series, Street Rodder, the Super Chevy series, gosh, there were so many different shows that we did together. So we worked together pretty often. And when we were working at a track, let's say the Super Chevy show series, I would always, let's say we had to do a race coverage or a car show series event on Sunday. I would fly into the area on Friday, get a rental car, whatever my rental car of choice for bracket racing at the time was. I'd go find a place to race on Friday night. I'd then go find a place to race on Saturday night. And then Sunday, I'd show up at the track and we'd do our TV stuff, and I'd fly out on Sunday night or Monday morning. And Garlitz found out that I was doing this and found out that I, you know, occasionally did well. And Don just didn't understand bracket racing that well. You know, he has the concept in his head, but to him, I was still beating dragsters with Sedan DeVille or a Ford Taurus or something like that, and he just couldn't figure it out. And I would show up, and he'd say, "Hey, did you go race last night?" And I'd say, "Yeah." And he'd say, "How did you do?" And if I pulled out a trophy, he'd just go, "Oh my God! How in the world do you? How can you do? Oh my God, Pat, come here and look at this! You won't believe what this man did." And he just thought it was the coolest thing in the world. Which I got a huge kick out of. I mean, forget the fact that it was Don Garlitz. Just his response was hilarious. But it is Don Garlitz, so I got a huge, kick out of it.
Right.
And
you do a pretty mean Don Garlitz impression, by the way.
Oh, my God. The whole bracket racing thing with the rental cars is simply a matter of me working in the industry, which normally would take away the most important thing about learning how to race, and that's seat time. Well, if you rent the same car over and over and over, I'll use the Ford Taurus Mercury Sable platform because I raced those for about 4 years. They were the staple mid-sized rental car for many agencies. The only difference between the two of them was the Sable was a floor shift console. Other than that, they were identical cars. Always pick the lower horsepower version so that they can't spin the tires on a frozen lake. That's a very key part of racing rental cars, especially front-wheel drive cars. You're up against the wall because rental cars put tires with the hardness of diamonds on them so that they last at 200,000 miles, which means, of course, they're going to spin no matter what, unless you really, really mess with tire pressure. However, the slower the car that you race, when I say slower, I mean the less horsepower of a car that you race, the more you can really hit the tree hard by taking your right leg, your right ankle, and the throttle linkage and converter of the car completely out of the question. You know how to do that?
Floor it.
Tell them.
Leave on the mat.
Exactly.
And pop the brake off. Yeah, that's how I used
floor,
to leave.
Floor both pedals.
Yeah.
And just the release the brake.
Yes.
The car will leave at full stall, which most of these cars is never more than 2,100 RPM, so it can't spin. Your only concern is tire pressure to keep the spin at a minimum. And you can flicker shallow a 17 or 18 second car and hit 5.0s all day long by adjusting tire pressure for your RPM and limit the tire spin because you've taken a quarter second of vehicle and human reaction out of the equation. So again, if you rent the same car over and over and over and over and over all year long, it's basically the same, in some cases more, like driving your own car.
Right.
You know, all the years that I was on the road, I was only ever home Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So I was actually driving the Tauruses and Sables and I raced the Cadillac Sedan DeVilles for a while because they were the highest horsepower cars you could buy and they could go fast. If I was at a track that had a minimum to run in Pro Eliminator or something, I'd always buy a Sedan DeVille because at the time, mid-1990s, it was the only 14-second car you could rent.
Anybody ever get mad at you? Any like local track, like who's this outside coming in?
I could
in?
Tell you stories, buddy.
Has to be.
The worst ones, there's two that stick out in my mind. The worst ones ever were where I doubled when I would run the box class just to get some time trials and run the no box class. And there were seven or eight times that I ended up doubling with both classes with a rental car. There was a few more times that I did it with my own car. But, Blue Mountain, Mississippi stands out, and I got paid, and I left very quickly. It was very uncomfortable. I'm almost out of battery time. You want me to...
What's your percentage?
Like 4 or something.
Oh, you
got to
plug in. You got to plug in. So do what you got to do.
Okay, so I'm going to disappear.
No, you want me to kick you out, and then you just come back?
No, I meant I'm going to disappear and put the phone, because I have to lay it flat. Yeah.
That's fine. Okay. I'll just bring you down here. Wait, I'll do this, and I'll tell. We are in intermission. Brett Kepner. If you have questions for Brett Kepner, please put them in the comment section, and I will tell you about our great sponsors, Total Seal Piston Rings, the leader in ring seal technology. How great is this, folks? How great is this? And you know, this could go on and on, but I'm thrilled. This is one of the deals where I wanted to have Brett on a long time ago, and it just didn't materialize. And now it's materializing, and it's great. And I appreciate all you guys. Share the show, tell your friends, and forward it along. We had Robert Height on yesterday, and we had Alan Reinhart the day before. Last week we had Matt Hartford and Kyle Larson and WFO Radio. You know, subscribe, enable push notifications, all of these things. And we got to get his battery going because we got to find out about this, right? Like, look at these giant rabbits. Yeah, Steve Brenwald, who does our graphic arts and is now doing some editing of the show. When you see the quick clips, he's a rabbit guy. And so when we talk about the rabbits, he's gonna love it. And also the fact that Brett at the out of nowhere just decides, yeah, I'm gonna become a photographer. Boom. Yeah, I'm going to try something new. So here's the deal. As much as it's this is a fun experience, I like to turn everything into a teachable moment learning experience. For all the kids out there, you heard him say he was doing the job for free for no one. He just started doing the job, just started writing columns, manuscripts about drag racing. He just started doing it. Nobody paid him. Nobody asked him to. He just did it because he loved it. And this is what he wanted to do. And he just started to do it and started to send it to people. So that right there is a great lesson for everybody out there who wants to do something that they love. It's like, just start doing it. Just do it. And then when the time comes that you could get paid, then you are already up to speed. As opposed to like, hey, I'll do something whenever you're ready, Brett, you just signal me and then I'll bring you back on. I know you're getting positioned. You're getting in position. He's plugging in, right? He's plugging in. Let's plug in. I can hear you now. I have to bring you on.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. This is not the first time this has happened on WFO.
Because you don't want to look at the ceiling of my house.
Oh, it's a very good ceiling you've got there.
It's, it would be a really interesting angle like this, wouldn't it? Actually, I want to ask you a question that I brought up earlier. Like I said, I don't know a single announcer who got into this business and did well in it. There's not many of us who started out to be an announcer. What was your story? How did you become an announcer?
Well, I love drag racing, Miami Hollywood Speedway, and that's my home track. And, yep. You know, Daryl Gwynn and Don Garlitz and Jungle Jim and the Coca-Cola cavalcade of funny cars and all that stuff happening early on. And I just loved being there with my dad, and we had a great time. And when they would call this weird category sportsman out, where all the ramp trucks would come out with like 18 and 19 second dial-ins, I was like, wow, we can do that. We can do that. So I wanted to be a bracket racer. They were open Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday. And so I was there all the time and got my learner's permit, 15 years old. You could go down the racetrack. And my parents were like, hey, man, you should try to get a job out there since you're there all the time. And I was doing morning announcements at my school. And obviously, you know, talker kid, talked a lot. They probably were trying to get rid of me. And so I went up to the tower and I talked to this gentleman named Paul Wunderlich and Mike Mitchell of Miami Hollywood. And they said, you know, we could use someone to help out with the announcer, a guy named Dale Hanks, real great guy. And I was like, yeah, I do morning announcements. That's great. And that was it. It was really, though, a way to get to the track and be at the track and have more purpose for being at the racetrack. And so Absolutely. What I would do some announcing and then I would race. And there would be these like rain out nights where it looked like rain in Miami, except it didn't rain. And so there were five people at the track and I would make like 50 runs in my dad's truck. And I learned to cut a light. And I ran high school. I won the high school track championship. I ran pro ET. And then we just kind of climbed the ladder. But I stopped announcing when I started to race more often. And we're still only seeing the ceiling, just so you know. And I kind of got away from it. And I really, my career is talk radio, like talk radio in Miami. I did a talk radio show. I worked for one of the talk radio legends down here. And his name was Neil Rogers. He's in the Talk Radio Hall of Fame. And
I never knew that.
I wanted to do talk radio, topical talk radio, you know, Stern-ish, that kind of stuff. But, you know, fun, irreverent talk radio. And I did that for a while. But then got a great job at satellite radio, XM satellite radio, doing NASCAR radio. And so they were like, pulled me back into motorsports. And I worked there for a while and I wanted to start doing some more drag racing. And then this lady named Susan Pollock, may she rest in peace. I heard she just passed away recently, worked at Palm Beach International Raceway and they had a Super Chevy show or something. And they're like, hey, man, she's like, I know you from, you want to come announce our race? And I got dragged back into announcing and now I'm where I am. So serendipity. Where are you? Look at this.
Can you still hear me?
I can hear you. Great.
Oh, okay.
But we can't see you. We can just see whiteness. It's like the great void. It's like you went.
No,
to
that's what I said. I covered up the lens because it's aiming at my ceiling. So it was the least I could do.
Did you plug in?
Yeah, I am plugged in.
Well, then can you show us
the charger for this phone is a pad. You have to lay it on it.
Oh,
so it's aimed straight up at the ceiling. I apologize.
Super high tech. So it'll be audio only.
Yeah, I sure am.
Okay. Well, we can do it.
The reason I asked about your announcing is my deal is like I said, this is the same as everybody else's.
I was also racing. Now I had started writing at that time. This was in 1977. And as I pointed out, Jim Kelly had already hired me. He actually gave me a monthly column that year in Superstock magazine before I turned, I think I just turned 18. And was also writing for Drag World, as I pointed out, et cetera, et cetera. But I was still racing my 66 Barracuda. And one night I had lost early in eliminations, and I went up, this was at St. Louis, I went up in the timing tower and was hanging out with the announcer, a guy I knew named Roger Monroe, who was an exceptional motorcycle racer. And in 1978, Roger Monroe got a job riding for the Vance and Hines Suzuki Top Fuel and Pro Stock team. So he quit, and the track operator, Phil Trover, came up to me and he says, "Hey, I need an announcer. You're an announcer." Oh, I ruined my own story. One night while Roger was up there, again, I had lost early and I was in the tower hanging out with Roger. And Roger said, "Hey, I got to go take a piss. Here, take over for a minute," and handed me the microphone. So I talked and, you know, surprised myself by finding out, you know, that, hey, this is very similar to writing, except I can't correct my mistakes. Roger went to the restroom, came out, listened to the PA, said, "Oh, good, he's talking. I can go hang out with my friends for an hour," which he did. Then he came back and said, "You know, hey, thanks." I gave him the microphone, and that was the end of that. Then Roger got the job. He quit, and Phil Trover said, "Hey, I need an announcer. You announced once, didn't you? Or you are announcer, aren't you?" And I said, "Well, I announced once." And he says, "Well, that's good enough. I'll give you $25 a night." Well, at the time, the class I was racing in paid $50 to win and $25 runner-up.
There you go. Runner-up money.
And I thought, well, you know, I can show up and get runner-up money every night, or I can keep beating my head against the all-stock automatic record, which keeps getting blown away from me. So that's how I fell into announcing. And within two more years, I was announcing UDRA and AHRA national events, again, just falling into the next pothole on the road. And that's how it happened.
Amazing.
The reason I wanted to bring that up is you brought up the fact that I just sent manuscripts to people. Your story, as well as my story, proves you need to be at the right spot at the right time. But a lot of times people don't know they're at the right spot at the right time unless they say, "Hey, is this the spot that I'm looking for?"
Right.
So don't ever be afraid to ask, you know, "Hey, I'd like to get into diamond mining. Is there an opening?"
Yes. Well, and that's it. It seems to be the stories I hear about, like, the current generation. And, you know, I love the kids that we have at NHRA and that I encounter. Like, I run into a lot of go-getters, but the stories, the anecdotal stories, is that kids don't want to do anything. And I don't know, man, I think they just need a little guidance, and that's it. Like, don't be afraid to dive into it. You'll be appreciated for that, even if you get it wrong. Right.
Like,
exactly. To do it. All right.
Yeah, so don't anybody think for 1 minute that Brett Kepner or Joe Costella or anybody else was any good at this at first.
No. Or now, at least in my case. So we got the photograph up. I don't know if you could see it, but the rabbits. What's up with the rabbits? You're an animal guy. The rabbits, like, these are giant rabbits, man. These things are huge. Tell me about you're an animal person. And, there's so many people who love animals in our sport of drag racing. But I didn't know. I've never seen these. These are huge rabbits.
My background, believe it or not, a lot of people know that I'm a sarcastic, joking person, but this is dead serious. I was brought up Amish.
Wow. And I didn't know that.
My father left the community at a young age for me. He was pretty young too, actually. Probably the greatest thing that ever happened to me was to get out of it. And therefore, I was brought up with a lot of animals, you know, the typical farmyard type. Lots of chickens and dogs and cats and all the other farmyard stuff that you would expect. So I've always been an animal lover. I also was a hunter for many, many years. I don't hunt anymore. I have nothing against hunters. And I understand the dire need for it when you don't have any money. Even though I hunted squirrels and rabbits and deer and stuff like that when I was a kid, which was kind of, you know, mandatory in that community, I also became a fan of pets, if you want. My significant other, who's been with me for years and years and years, works at a 24-hour animal emergency hospital, literally like an emergency room surgeon. And because of that, they get a lot of animals brought in, wild animals that we do rehabilitate, including squirrels and stuff like that. Those rabbits are called Flemish Giants. They're the largest rabbit breed. There's a new breed that they're working on called Continental Giants, which are slightly bigger, but these guys will get 25 pounds pretty easy. They're incredibly docile, very affectionate, violently intelligent.
Really?
You know, they're lagomorphs, basically rodents, so they're not stupid in any way, shape, or form. And basically are just giant hopping dogs, and we've got them.
That is incredible.
We've had quite a few, so it's not just one pair that we've dealt with. I always try with all animals. I always try to have a pair of something. I think it's kind of cruel to the animal to make it the only freak in the building. You know, try to keep them in pairs to where they understand what they are and learn how to be what they're supposed to be. But we also have cats, dogs, all the other stuff that we rehab in and out of here. So yeah, we've got lots of animals.
Interesting. All right. So I'm going to put up a couple of photographs next, and we're going to start to wind down, obviously, because your phone is running out of juice. But a couple of photos that I think are cool because you did these photos. These are your photos. And this is something that Ted Jones and Garlitz like made a big deal about, that late in life, you became a photographer. Here's the story from Matt Polito. I was on the line at Englishtown one year when Brett comes up to me with a point and shoot camera and says he's been taking racing photos with it and he would like my feedback. I thought it was a joke, but it was Brett, so I agreed to look at them. Shockingly, some of them were really good. Now, I don't know if that's bad or good that Polito says shockingly or not, Brett, but I gave him some pointers and we discussed technique. He worked at it and got truly impressive with a point and shoot camera, ! I lent him some of my own professional equipment and he got really good, really fast. He started getting magazine assignments. He shot thousands of photos, worked hard, and anyways, got better and better and better. And, you know, you guys set up a website, but we've got some of the photos that you've taken. What was that about? Like, is that just because you know drag racing and you know what the best of the best, what cool shots are, like these shots right here, other than standing in front of a car that's burning out right at you? These are great shots.
Well, I'll tell you what, before anything else, did I just lose you?
No, I got you. There you are. Oh, now you lost. Well, you know, he clicked out of there. He accidentally clicked out. Isn't this great? And this is the last show of the week, y'all. And those of you who want an Ignition show this week, you may or may not be able to tell, but I've caught some sort of cold. So we're going to throw something up there for the Patreons. Just come right back through the same link, Brett. Look at some of these photographs, like the parachute shots, right? Like drag photogs, got to get the parachute shots. And you got to get low. You got to get low. Like, look at this. Look how cool that is, right? And every once in a while, you're going to catch one, like something wild happening. And Brett obviously got that one. And with the lights and the blur and the speed, pretty amazing stuff. But I want to ask him about this one. What is going on here? And it looks like Greg Anderson breaking in some slicks is what it looks like. So we'll see as we wait for Brett to come back in. And let's see what George says. I remember Brett from those days back at St. Louis International Raceway, the stories of Mr. Dirt. And Keith asked if this is live. Yes. Tell Brett Missy Poo Poo loves him. That's not the kind of thing I feel comfortable saying, Keith. I don't know. Maybe I'm old school. It feels weird. Let's see. Steve says, I told the wife we need to get rid of about five of our rabbits. She wants a Flemish Giant. Yes. Let's see. Steve says, always loves Brett's stories. No, this has been great. Jerron says, I fell into painting. Yeah, I don't want to hear your story, Jerron. Yeah. And then I accidentally figured out that I'm super talented at a bunch of stuff. Yeah. Some of us have to work hard. And Jerron's just like, yeah, look what I did. Isn't it great? Yes. Pretty amazing. Monica, great photos. And there you have it. All right. I am now concerned that Brett is maybe, I got to tell him. The good news is everything goes on the air. You know, I was talking about that, that talk show host that is in the Hall of Fame. And he always taught us that the audience, even when things look, they go totally sideways, the audience loves that. They love being behind the scenes. And so when things go totally sideways and you have technical difficulties or whatever, you just got to roll with it and keep it going. And you guys will appreciate it. And I don't think that there's anybody out there who's like, oh my gosh, the thing went sideways with Brett. You're living the dream with us. Like, look, and we stall around and he'll be back in 2 seconds. Blake says, I could tell you've got a cold. I told my mom that your voice sounded differently. Yes, Blake, I do. I have a cold. I'm soldiering through, though. Let's see. He's coming back. He's not back yet. Well, if the phone died, that is a problem. That is a problem. But we're going to keep on going. See, my system, I'm looking at a screen, which you guys may or may not realize. And every once in a while, when you see my eyes kind of go down here, it's something that I am controlling, like bringing up pictures and whatnot. And of course, the layout of this stuff. Let's see. No, not yet. Oh, there he is. Where, he went out to the car? What did he do? I see you, Brett. We're going to keep on trying. Steve says, ask Brett about the infamous Mid-America Raceway in the late 1970s. I would love to. Believe me, I would love to. I have an idea. Let's see if I can. We're going to give him a couple more seconds to kind of get things right. And if not, then I'm going to do the emergency break glass situation. Just ensure more appearances. Yes, Jeff. Well, I think now that we broke the ice with Brett, we're going to be good. You know, there's been some mutual trust built. Let me kick him out and see if I can do something. Now, listen, you guys are along for the ride. This is the emergency situation here. I don't know if you're going to be able to hear this or not. But this is it. Put your comments in the comment section. Let's see what you have to say about all of this. And now, oh, wait, he's coming back. Yeah, whatever is happening, it's just not. I don't always do this because this is a live stream. This is WFO. Let's see if we can call him. Yeah, typing and doing the show. Not always the easiest.
I don't know what's going on.
I've got you on the phone line though, Brett, and we're gonna do listen, it doesn't matter. Audience can hear you, right? Audience, can you guys hear Brett? Yeah.
Everybody raise your hand.
Raise your hand. So let's finish it up. It doesn't listen. The thing is that what we're gonna put on the screen is these wonderful photographs you've taken. And I've got there's a Trans Am doing a burnout right at me and this real cool little coupe coming at me. How did you get into the photography? Like, was it just because you love drag racing and inherently knew what to do?
By the way, I'm hooked up. I'm actually sitting in that white Grand Marquis because I know that I have a super high power car charger, and thought maybe it would work if I jumped back on the car, and it appears to be working. So I don't think we're in a rush anymore.
Well, no, but we have you on audio only. I think the video portion of my deal that we were doing, I think it just drives the phone harder.
I think most viewers will be appreciative of the new change, so don't worry about it.
Except I have to be here alone, but that's fine. The photog stuff, why and how?
You already explained it. Matt Polito and I have been friends for decades. Out on the starting line at the NHRA Summer Nationals, it would have been 2003. I was there doing the NHRA Pro Modified coverage, which I did for whatever it was, 16, 17 years. And Saturday night during qualifying, this is back when the race was in May, because I remember we were freezing. Out on the starting line, it was the whole gang. It was Steve Bell. It was Dave Mulcarrick. It was Matt Polito. It was Norman Blake. It was Robert Irvin. It was Lewis Bloom, fantastic photographer in his own right.
Yes, Lewis.
And we were all hanging around. And I had bought a digital Olympus camera, 1 megapixel, I might add. It was high tech at the time. Little point and shoot. And, you know, I had traveled all my life with all these fantastic photographers, knew nothing about photography, but I had watched them all doing what they did and had always wanted to try it, but, you know, I had too many other things on my plate.
Sure.
So I bought this little digital camera and I was out just goofing around, taking pictures and trying some interesting stuff. And, you know, I'd turn off the flash and try to do timed exposures, which I thought were really cool looking, that those guys used to do. And Polito and Lewis came up and said, you know, hey, you know, let me see what you're actually shooting here. Maybe we can help you out. And I said, hey, I'm all for help. And Polito looked at it and he said, what do you think, Lewis? And Lewis kind of went, eh, you know, Lewis, always laugh a minute and
I love
jovial Lewis. Kind of guy.
Yes, he is a very positive energy.
Yeah, that's what he is. Oh, I hope he's listening to this.
Hopefully he's out there in Germany. Love you, Lewis. Serious.
Yeah, he is having a great time in his new life in Germany. He really is. He's a married man, and he just posted a picture today of him mountain biking in Bavaria, and he's having a good time.
Amazing.
Anyway, they all kind of handed around. This camera had one of those little tiny postage stamp-sized screens on the back where you could actually view the image. And they were passing it around in this group, and they're all kind of mumbling and pointing and stuff like that. And Polito looks at me and he says, you know, this isn't that bad. And I said, well, yeah, but it's a close and play equivalent of a camera, you know? And he says, no, he says, it's not that bad. He said, take some more stuff, take it home and take some more stuff there and send it to me. And we'll, you know, I'll help you out a little bit. Maybe there's something going on here. And he apparently saw something there that I sure as hell didn't. Lewis felt the same way. And long story short, I took it to the local racetrack where I was promoting a Tuesday night 10-inch tire series. And, you know, took some pictures, you know, just goofed around. And sent it to Matt. And Matt said, is there a photographer at the time it was Gateway Motorsports Park or Gateway International Raceway. And I said, not to my knowledge. And he says, I'm going to put these pictures on my site. You tell people that they're available and let's see if we can't sell some of these. And sure enough, he got, you know, a couple of orders for, you know, 10 bucks a piece or whatever the hell we were selling them for. That was in 2003. And when I put down the camera because Gateway closed in 2010, I had 150,000 images on Matt Polito's automated sales site. And that business was making a sizable amount of money per year.
Wow.
And as you pointed out, you know, I had quite something on the order of 8 or 9 magazine covers in that period, 1 or 2 center spreads. I had 2 rule book covers, had an entire Harley Davidson calendar with 12 months, you know, 12 images of my stuff. So that to me was no different than going to the Yankees baseball camp and getting to stand at the home plate and, you know, get a base hit. I mean, it was just so stupid. It was hard to believe.
Yeah. No, amazing, because the shots are great. Like the burnout shots and these cars are coming right at you. Like, this is amazing stuff. You've done yet low. I'm looking at the motorcycle shot, you know, 2 guys like looking tough. You got to get low and you caught a couple of crash shots that you caught.
I was notorious for laying down and getting those ground level shots. Yeah. The difference, I guess, in the advantage that I had was Polito was basically my teacher. But Lewis and Irvin and Norman Blake and all those other guys helped so much. And they taught me the film techniques. Matt especially absolutely refused to allow me to set the camera on automatic. I had to use all manual settings. He would not let me hold my finger down. I had to take one picture on one run. And he said, if you miss it, learn what you missed and change it for the next car. He was not into the machine gun, rapid fire, you know, fill the card and pick one good one technique that's so common now.
Right.
Don't get me wrong. there's nothing wrong with that technique. You know, it's kind of like saying, well, you know, I want you to use a typewriter instead of a computer to write your science project. It's the same outcome. It's just one's incredibly more easy than the other. And I got nothing but respect for anybody who takes pictures. You know, yes, digital photography is easier than film photography, but guess what? You know, driving a 2021 Camaro is a whole lot easier than driving a 1913 Maxwell, you know?
Yes.
So who's to blame, you know? So my point is, they really made me learn photography as opposed to just use the tools that are on any modern digital camera. And that gave me a really unique aspect or viewpoint, I guess I should say.
Well, you've done great. All right. So as you can imagine, there's thousands of questions out there, but I think we're going to wrap up because we've been going for an hour and 20. And I want to tell you, like, this has been great. And I'm thrilled that we did this, but let's just make sure, let's try our best to make sure this is not the last time and revisit some of the stuff that we didn't get to. Is there anything that you would like to say? Like, for instance, Jeff says, you know, Brett equals Bonneville. Ask him. Another guy says, ask Brett, where is it? Stand by. The infamous Mid-America Raceway in the late 1970s, says Steve. Like, so there's a lot of things that people want to ask you about. Can we get you to come back and talk about some of these things in the future?
Absolutely. For those that don't know, and I don't make this a very big deal, I was an official at Bonneville for 30 years.
I've never been.
I don't even know if you know that.
I've never been. No, I've seen photographs of you as an official. But I, you know, Brian is always telling me, Loans, of course, it's telling me, you know, Joe, you got to go. You got to go. You got to see it. You got to experience it. You got to go. You got to go. And I just haven't just yet, but I plan to and I want to. But I understand the connection and the significance of that place. And it seems pretty amazing.
I can't tell you how much I respect you because I think you're right. I think you do understand. Now, don't get me wrong. Nobody can comprehend anything about Bonneville until you've been there. It's not just the incredible place, which is unlike anything else on the planet. It's also a very, very, very unique motorsport. You know, a lot of people think that Bonneville is long drag racing. And in fact, drag racing is short Bonneville. Bonneville came first. And drag racing was created by Lakes racers and Bonneville racers who were looking for a place to run their cars other than the lakes in Bonneville. So the analogy and the connection there goes far, far deeper than what people just see on television or read in magazines. I'd be more than happy to talk about that. Mid-America Raceways, I was the first track that I used to go to on a weekly basis, and I went there. Or how I got there 40 miles away was my dad told me, I don't have time to drive you, so go do what I did when I was your age. And that was?
Hitchhike.
Hitchhike, of course.
Oh, my gosh. Your dad sent you out hitchhiking.
in 1971 and 2, hitchhiking was a very acceptable mode of transportation. Women did it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It wasn't unusual at all. It wasn't, you know, people asking to be raped or shot or murdered or anything like that. Don't get me wrong. I got picked up by a few freaks, but that's going to happen no matter how many times you deal with the public. I hitchhiked all over the place. So we'll talk about that and all the other stuff that we missed, because there is an awful lot more. There's a few questions I've got that I want to ask you. So,
well, I think it's been great. Listen, most importantly, we broke the ice on this deal. You know, too long to get this point, but we got to this point, and I can tell you that the audience has loved it and enjoyed it, and that's what's most important. And so this is going to drive us into the weekend. What about, you know, where might we see you at a race that would be convenient for you to get to?
Here, certainly St. Louis.
Okay.
You know, I'm surrounded by drag strips here. It's not like Gateway is the only track near St. Louis. As a matter of fact, I very seldom race at Gateway. I do most of my racing at little tracks in Missouri called Bonterra Drag Strip, Jeffers Motorsports Park, which is referred to as Sykeston for the town that it's located in. There's three other tracks around Illinois, or relatively close in Illinois, around Gateway that are operational. So there's plenty of places for me to go. I just am not on the road anymore. So there you go.
Got it. Brett, thank you very much for joining us on WFO Radio. This has been fantastic. The audience is loving it based on their comments. I have loved it. We got to kind of delve into a couple of areas, but I know we're just scratching the surface. Thank you for making the effort with, you know, going and plugging in and going out to the car and the fast charger, all of that. That was like over and above the call of duty. Thank you for doing that. Yeah. And it was great.
I apologize. Next time I'll be at 100% when we start. So me and the phone.
Well, I'm not 100% either. Hey, I love the fact that you're not 100% because I'm not 100%. Today was a tough one, but I think we soldiered through I had a great time. So that's what matters, I think, most to us, right? Whether we had a good time.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. Thank you so much for everybody listening. I really appreciate the support. And you call any Thursday and I'll be there for you.
Well, okay. One more thing. Is there something, like, we didn't even talk about the drag track, you know, project. We didn't talk about that. We'll talk about that next time. But where people can connect with you social media wise, like a public social media that maybe our listeners could follow along with you, or something where you put out stuff. Do you have anything like that that I should tell them about?
I'm on Facebook, Brett Kepner, Brett Kepner. It's an open page. It's not, you know, just a silhouette of a girl and my name and no information.
All right.
So anybody can contact me there. So okay. Feel free to do it. Send me a private message. Do whatever you want.
There you go. All right. Well, we'll have you back. We'll talk all the things not that we could ever talk all the things that we didn't get to this time. But Brett, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. And we'll talk soon.
Thanks, buddy.
There he goes. Brett Kepner with us here on WFO Radio. What about that? And just like that. Man, it was really great. It's unfortunate about the battery deal, but honestly, I wouldn't change it, right? Because it's just a genuine. It is what it is. And the story about Polito and Lewis and all of these different people, and, you know, Holly Vining out there, and the connections that people have had. See, drag racing is relatively small, and that Brett had never been on the show, really a bad stat. And there are some others, many others, but I'm working hard to rectify all of those bad stats. And this was one that he and I had communicated a few times, and well, we finally got it done and we finally got it in there. I do apologize that we had to have him on the phone line, but that was halfway through. And I don't know, I felt like we did what we had to do to get it done. And that's all you can ask. Do what you got to do to get it done. And we did. All right, everybody, that is going to do it. Let me tell you about the people who make it possible. Like, these are the people who make it possible for us to do this. Like, for instance, the WFO store. Y'all love the show so much. How about buying some gear? Go to the store, WFOradio.com. We got all kinds of stuff in there. And interesting, like even books and whatnot. Oh, you want to hear something great? I don't have it around. I was super excited last night. I'm reading the Warren Johnson book by Kelly Wade. And I got too excited. I had to shoot forward to the Dodge Boys thing. I wanted to read it cover to cover, but then I had to shoot forward to the Dodge Boys thing to just find out. And I'm reading, and in the book about Warren Johnson, there is a WFO radio mention about an interview we did with WJ in 2015, where I pressed him on the whole Dodge Boys situation. And I'm not saying I was the first to ever press him, but, you know, we recorded it and put it out, and it did get a lot of traction back in our audio only podcast days, 2015. But now it is immortal. It is immortal. It is in the book about Warren Johnson, the quotes that he gave on WFO radio about, like, yeah, but Warren, shouldn't you have 8 championships, right? That kind of deal. And it's in the book. You can get the book in the WFO store via Amazon, on our website, right? And we're going to have Kelly on at some point real soon, and it was great. And I was just overwhelmed. Like, we actually exist. We're in a book now, which was great. But also big thanks to samtech.edu and Marvin Rodex, coffeeandgrills.com, Total Seal Piston Rings, the leader in ring seal technology, totalseal.com, and Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School. If you want the 10th anniversary t-shirt, we've got links in the WFO store to Nitro Fish And you can check them out and get our 10th anniversary t-shirt and all kinds of gear. You know how it is. You got to buy all the gear and subscribe to everything and never miss a show. This is our final show of the week. For you Ignition people out there, no Ignition this week. Monday was Memorial Day. We had plans to do it, but then I caught this code, which you probably can tell. I'm trying very hard to make sure that you cannot tell, but I think the cat's out of the bag. So let's see. Final comments. WFO part of written history. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. BK first Thursday of every month. Ooh, we're guys working on a schedule. Another awesome interview, Joe. Thank you, Spock. Appreciate it. Appreciate it, Joe. Maybe your cold is a side effect of your window repair. That is the first to come to mind. I hope you knock it out. Oh, yeah, now I'm going to beat this thing. Actually, I'm viewing this cold as a good thing. And I know you might be saying, like, well, why? Why is that? Why is it good to have a cold? And the answer is, this is my first, like, test of my immune system in a year and a half. I had a really good run prior to the COVID. And then with the masks and staying away from everybody, there was nothing. And so I think it's probably a good thing to give your immune system a little something to fight every once in a while. I'm not saying go try to get a cold, folks. But I'm just trying to look at the silver lining. You know it's me. I always do that. Silver lining. Blake, I hope you get better. Take care. Yeah, oh no, I'm going to be better in a second. Danny, thank you, Danny. Appreciate it. Fantastic show. Yeah, everybody knows. They're all piling on now. They could tell. They could tell. Well, the drugs are wearing off. And that's another one. Like Jeff says, better than happy hour, Joe. Wow. Thanks, Brett and Joe. Sorry, Courtney and Jason. Why does it have to be at someone else's expense? That's the thing, is there's no greatest show. There's always just the next show. And we're trying really hard. I love the fact that you guys don't care about any of the technical difficulties. Thank you for that. We do our best. All right, that's it. I'm out. I'm going to go. You don't even want to know. This guy's right, though. Joe for president. Things would change. We would unite as a country, as one, with one great vision. Drag racing. All right, everybody. Thanks to Brett Kepner for just being awesome and willing to do it. And thanks to Matt Polito and Brendan Vining and everybody who I kind of asked a couple of questions. Get a little backstory on. Pretty amazing stuff. And the sport that we all love, drag racing, brings out some special people. This photo, I didn't get to show him in the background. Michael Panic in the yellow shirt. First cameraman I ever worked with at the NHRA, Michael Panic. Amazing stuff. All right, everybody, thank you so much. And remember, patreon.com/WFO radio if you want to join the VIP Insiders Listeners Club. patreon.com/WFO radio. You can find it on our website. See you next week, WFO.